It's Friday night. That means it's time for The Don Tony Show.
You've waited all week, and now it's finally here. Get Don Tony's perspective on current affairs in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
And now, your host, the man, the legend, Don Tony.
Don Tony. Don Tony. Don Tony.
What's up, everybody? Friday night, February 26, 2021. I am back once again. Welcome to this edition of the Don Tony Show. What an interesting week it's been. Personally, pro wrestling news. Hope everybody is doing well. Hope your weekend looks bright. And shout out to everybody. You know, thank you for a really fun week. I mean, we started with the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. All the shows that we did during a week. And next week, we have AEW Revolution. Next Wednesday, we got some very interesting content coming for AEW NXT. Little roll call, if you don't mind. I want to give a shout out to some of... my friends out there tuning in live, Daniel San, David Levy, Tony Gloss, Darren Gordon Hill, One Fall Podcast, Addison Miller, Sam Roger Rubio, Michael Gonzalez, So Fly, Bimor, Lion 2012, Austin Nance, and it goes on and on and on. Rose Jobert, Chris Maycock. By the way, VJ, I don't know if you're tuning in live tonight, but if you get a chance to see this, or if any of you out there know VJ, please let him know that I checked the tracking information for Canada Post, and they delivered his box of goodies, I think, on Tuesday. They left it at his front door. It was the AEW heavyweight title. It was the signed magazine. It was a couple of things in there, so I haven't heard from him. Figured I'd get a thank you. I'm kidding. I mean, I just hope he got it because I don't know why they left it at the front door. It was a 15-pound box. But anyway, how's everybody doing? What'd you think about SmackDown tonight? Hopefully no one out there gets a little triggered at my shirt of choice tonight. Felt like showing a little shout-out appreciation to Velveteen Dream. Remember, I come from a place where you're innocent until proven guilty. Some of the things that went down, very borderline, questionable. But when you saw some of the motives and some of the dishonesty that came out when that first happened, you know, I give people a benefit of the doubt. So, SmackDown tonight, not a bad show. Very easy to get into tonight. Obviously, there was no surprise, but it was made official tonight that Bianca Belair will be taking on Sasha Banks at WrestleMania. And you know what? Kudos to WWE because they did exactly what needed to be done. You didn't need any heel turns. You didn't need any swerves. You didn't need any tag team title win and then a loss and then falling out, blaming each other. Simply the EST versus the boss. It's not rocket science. They did that. The only thing I thought was a little corny tonight, and yes, I'm a little stickler to detail. When you got Reginald coming out, Bianca, whatever decision you make, if you choose Sasha, you will be disappointed at WrestleMania. And he goes on and on and on and on. And I'm a fan of Reginald. I like him. So I don't want anybody that's new thinking I'm mocking him. But he's talking on and on and on, saying to Bianca, it will be embarrassed at WrestleMania. And then Sasha's music hits. And she's like, don't you ever speak for me. Well, sister, why did you wait until he was done talking before you hit your music? Storyline. Storyline. I hate that I have to say that when we discuss things sometimes, because some of you out there, you know, newer listeners mostly, DT, you know it's a storyline, right? Like, I have to actually put that disclaimer. Seriously, you, and oh, and we got the laugh today. I'm not very good at impersonating Sasha Banks. No, Daniel, I think Reginald does have a good place on SmackDown. They don't, you know, overuse him. Obviously, he's got a little crush. We can't say infatuation. Infatuation sounds more stalker territory. But Reginald has a crush on Sasha Banks. That would be the way to describe his relationship with her. But I like that. Talk and talk and talk and talk. And then, don't you ever speak for me. I keep doing that. My nose is going to be red tomorrow. I keep doing that. My nose will be red in about 2 minutes. But, yeah, that laugh. I mean, you know, you could hear, like, some of her, the way she talks, she emphasizes certain words. Hey, nothing wrong with it. Progression, tweaking, nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Now, tonight, we will talk about SmackDown. We will get into the AEW and NXT quarter hour ratings. If you follow me on a weekly basis, it might be time to stick the fork in the grizzled young veterans. I think it's time to stick a fork in them. They are cooked. I appreciate all of the places out there that suddenly now realize that breaking down quarter hour ratings on a weekly basis is a very important thing. The hell with the demos. Like I said repeatedly, the demos are for the wrestling companies themselves, the networks, the advertisers. All of these goofs online focusing only on demos, you know, and it really pisses me off when they're like, oh, blah, 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 was third of the night. No, it wasn't third of the night. You're looking at one particular demo and using third of the night. You got to go with the overall numbers. Because if your numbers go down 33%, but you're going to say, oh, we were fifth all night. You still got a third of your fans that aren't tuning in live. And that's the bottom line. We didn't have suddenly a new streaming medium develop in the last year, couple of months, that suddenly they're not. I hate when people do that, man. I hate it. By the way, I am going to be updating the emojis this weekend for our members, my family members, La Nostra Familia. I'm going to be uploading some vintage DT, the 12-inch version, the extended edition, the extended version that if I put it live for everybody here, you would fall asleep or you would probably go watch somebody else. Trust me. If something is really good and the family thinks that everybody would enjoy it in its entirety overall, then I'll post it for everybody. Now, I know some of you are aware of it too. It will officially go on sale Sunday. I've been doing this since 1997. I'm not going to get into a rant. We're going to get right back to wrestling. But I want to just make one comment. I've been doing this since 1997. One of the things that I always wanted was parody shirts. Parody shirts of, you know, various things that I've enjoyed over the years with the show theme to it. Now, it's not easy to do parody shirts in the past, depending on who the hosts were for various reasons. And if you look, I've always had Beavis and Butthead in the background. Now, I don't eat, sleep, shit Beavis and Butthead, but, you know, I always enjoyed their humor back in the day. And I think it's also because when I was at my darkest time, you know, severely injured, you know, that laughter was absolutely necessary. So somebody who's a very good artist, finally, you know, like I've had people over the years, hey, let me do this for you. Hey, let me do this for you. And they don't do it. Well, a friend of the family stepped up and said, DT, you want the parody shirt? You got the parody shirt. So I'd like for your opinion, everyone. Which one do you like more? Because both of them are going to go on sale in the form of shirts. We're also going to make like pouches and mugs and everything like that. But it is official. The Don Tony Mish Beavis and Butthead. This is something that I've wanted for years, and I could finally put it out there. Now, for anybody that's going to say, oh, Mike Judge might be angry, MTV, it's a parody shirt. Parody shirts are allowed. Believe it or not, a lot of wrestlers over the years, tag teams, have done Beavis and Butthead parodies. You all have seen the Road Warriors Beavis and Butthead parody. So for some people out there that don't understand how parody works and how, you know, save it, seriously. But this one is going on sale, and we have a little variation. Now, I know the black on the hair kind of blends in with the black background. Trust me, the shirts will not be black for that one. But yeah, so I'm curious which one you like more. Do you like the one with the couch? I kind of like this one because with the microphone, it pretty much explains what we do. I like this one, seriously. So now I have someone who's going to make a new logo for Breakfast Soup Raw. Make it cartoony. Like that, this way we could put a logo too. But yeah, so we're working on that. Now, if you tuned in last night to the show, much love. We had a fun show last night. By the way, I have a new prize wheel coming. And I got one of those things, you know, with the ball, raffle balls that you spin around. WWE did it in the past. WCW has done it where they just pull random balls out of a thing. You know, we're going to get that too. So when we do giveaways in the future, we're actually going to do the balls. It's going to be fun, man. I'm so excited what we're going to do. But yesterday we had quite a bit of serious discussion. And for those that may not have tuned in yesterday, I really wanted to mention this tonight. If you're not aware of it already, and granted, a lot of you out there never really watched the recent past couple of years with NWA, but if you go back to a year, well, really a year and a half ago, you know, in the early days of Wednesday Night Dynamite, I told you that I absolutely loved watching the question mark. I did my horrible impersonations of him, but he died. He died a couple of days ago. We don't know his age. I'm guessing around 40 years old, if that. I mean, his pairing with Aaron Stevens was money. And you look at his physique. Now, in this picture, he actually doesn't look like he's got much of a gut, but it's so generic. A cotton mask. You know, just, I guess it's cotton or whatever material, Lycric, what, I don't know what they use. I have the Don Tony mask, the deli man, but I don't know what it's actually. But, you know, you have a generic mask with a white question mark on it. They come up with a country Mangrovia, and he gets over. And, you know, it's just, it was out of nowhere, unexpected. No one was aware, as far as we know, was aware of any health condition on his part. Now, as I said about Brody Lee, we're not owed an explanation as to why somebody passes. If that is made public, then we can find out what happened. But it's obviously not normal for someone to die that young. And again, I don't know his exact age, but my gut feeling, he's around 40. And man, I mean, just his work is the question mark, his work is Josephus. And as I mentioned yesterday, great family man, beloved in the wrestling world. No, maybe not one of the first people you go to when you think of people you absolutely have come crossed paths with over the years and say, man, beloved, but everybody that ever worked with him. You see all the tributes being posted the last 2 days. That love is real. And they're not putting this guy on a pedestal because he died. You know, that love and that friendship. I mean, Thunder Rosa, you know, last year, just search her Twitter and just type in his name and see all the posts she wrote. She adored him. I mean, it's just real shame, man. So my condolences to the family and friends. us fellow fans send it. And just really, really sad. Another death that I wanted to share with you, and I made mention to it yesterday. I didn't have any details, and honestly, I still don't have any details. And yes, 99% of you out there probably never heard of him. But, you know, my shows, you know, we try to show a little respect, pay a little tribute to the wrestlers that don't give you the 20 likes, that don't give you the thumbs up, that doesn't give you the, you know, the attention that you want to put. You know, this is sad as well. We don't know the details. Daquan Meadows, DK Meadows, was an independent wrestler, wrestled here in the Northeast, wrestled for CZW, wrestled for various promotions. He wrestled in Jersey in December, and he passed away. No cause of death, no idea what happened. And obviously, if you look at him, he's young. I would think maybe late 20s, maybe late 20s. But, you know, it's sad because, you know, almost nobody out there is even mentioning it. And you know what? I'm not going to tell people how to run their news sites or social media or anything like that, but be real and be honest about it. You know, when you see some of these websites, we are saddened by the news of Daquan Meadows dying, or we are crushed, or we are floored. And then you see that same opening sentence done. Even if somebody's cat or dog died by a wrestler, you know, we are saddened, and they don't give a shit. They don't give a shit. And I think it's a little bit, did he wrestle for WXW? I think he might have. I know he wrestled a lot in Jersey, and he was only in the business for about 3 or 4 years. I think he wrestled for about 3 years and then, you know, training in the school for a little less than a year. But, you know, just be genuine about it. I mean, yes, I don't like the sites that, unless you had some type of notoriety, they don't give a shit about you at all, unless other people are talking about it. But to write that same generic, you know, we are saddened, we are floored, we are, you don't give a shit. If you gave a shit, you wouldn't cut and paste the same exact words over and over and over again. So my condolences to the family and friends of Daquan Meadows, DK Meadows. He passed away. If I get more information on either Joseph Hudson or Daquan Meadows, I will definitely let you know. So now, yesterday, a few of you wanted me to talk about it. I said I was going to save it for tonight's show. I'm just going to get into it very briefly. You know, there was a lot of news this week about WWE signing a bunch of upcoming talents, not just in the world of pro wrestling, but there's a couple of people like Parker Bordeaux. I always get tongue-tied with his name. That, you know, have a promising future. Rick Steiner's son, you know, he's been in football. You know, I mean, let's not jump the gun here. Whether it's Steiner's son or Parker, you know, and I'm avoiding his last name, you know, they still have to train and they still have to put it all together in the ring. Just because they look good and just be, I don't want to single anybody out, but, you know, Max Muscle comes to mind right away. You could have the perfect look. You could have the body. You could have the muscles. You could have a big football or sports background. If you can't put it together in the ring, that means nothing. So if people out there making all this crazy-ass hype, especially about Rick Steiner's son, you know, you haven't seen him do even a headlock yet. So relax, relax. I know, Benjamin, I mispronounce his name pretty much every time. Is it Boudreaux? Is it Boudreaux? Because I remember the famous baseball Hall of Famer, Lou Boudreaux. So, Benjamin, you will be my Webster Dictionary right now. Is it Boudreaux? Boudreaux? Yes. Thank you. Thank you. So I can pronounce it. It's just, you know, it's got to sink in. Who is the wrestler a year or two ago that I always made a mistake on their name, someone's going to remember. And then I finally got it right, and now I never get it wrong. Who I can't remember who the wrestler was. Oh, I know who it was. Dominik Dijakovic. Remember early on, Dijakovic. I should have slapped myself every time I said it that way. Oh, tonight on NXT, Dominik Dijakovic. Finally got it right. Dijakovic, Austin, thank you. Austin's big friend of the family. So anyway, I'm going to run down the list. I am going to read you the bio that WWE posted next to each one of these signees. It's only two or three sentences. This whole segment will only take a couple of three, 4 minutes tops. So I don't want anybody to think, you're going to fall asleep. No. I'm going to show you a picture of each person that they signed and that two or three sentence back. I don't need to tell you the bio of Taya Valkyrie. You know what she has done. And you know how much she deserves getting this shot. But I'm going to read you what they put up. And some of these individuals really don't have a wrestling background. But some of them, you just look at them and you're like, man, if they could put it together in the ring, you know they got, pardon my pun, diamond in the rough. Seriously. No, this is not the 12. I apologize. For some reason, a lot of you out there thought I was doing a 12-hour show this weekend. I said that somebody challenged me to do a 12-hour show, and I'm going to do it in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to do it either right before Mania or right after Mania. I personally think I'm going to do it before Mania, so we have some very good conversation, to get into. So, but you know what, Daniel? Don't reveal who stands out to you the most, because I want everybody that is active right now in the chat room. By the way, shout out to everybody who's on Twitch tonight as well. Unfortunately, I don't have Facebook streaming. I don't have Twitter streaming. I don't have Periscope streaming because Twitch, apparently, I'm like this close of being able to be an affiliate for Twitch. And apparently I need to get a few more people to tune in live. So I'm sorry for doing this, but rather than having people scattered on Twitter or Periscope on Facebook, tonight it's streaming live from YouTube and Twitch. So if we get a bunch of people to tune into Twitch one night, that puts it over the top. Yours truly could make a little bit of wampum. Like my ass man. Plate in the background. Oh, you have no idea what happened today, man. Let me give you all seriously a piece of advice. You have walls like I do, and you want to hang up posters, or maybe you're getting into podcasting and or you stream games and you're making like a little backdrop like I do. Do not use command strips. I made the biggest mistake by buying those little command strips that you could peel off if you want to move stuff around. Almost everything you see in the back of me, I use probably about a half a dozen command strips for each poster. The black panels behind it, I use command strips. And now what's happening is every week something is falling down and the command strips suck. Even a piece of goddamn paper doesn't hold up. So now I'm using, I swear to you, I'm using Gorilla Glue. Not in my hair, but I'm using it on the walls. So do not use command strips. Or if you use them, be prepared that in the future, you're going to have to either put new ones up or you're going to have to find a different solution. I'm just waiting. While we're doing a show, and you know what's going to happen. We're going to be doing a show once, and like the big Don Tony thing in the background, the back of the panels are going to fall down, and it's going to look, put it this way. Remember Mean Gene? Fuck it. Trust me, I'm not going to say fuck it. I'm going to be like, fuck. All right. Before you post your names, I'm going to show you the names that they signed. Other than Taya Valkyrie, I want you to tell me after I post all the names, who gives you that vibe that you think could be a big star in the future? I know we've talked about Parker Boudreaux, Taya Valkyrie, obviously LA Knight, Eli Drake. Now, I will tell you, everybody had the Performance Center shirt on except for Eli Drake. There's no photo of Eli Drake. So Eli Drake is the only person you will not see in a photo, but you already know who he is. But for some reason, he's the only one that's not posing with a performance. He's not, I guess he really was home when they interviewed him last week. So anyway, what they said about LA Knight, Eli Drake, Sean Ricker, who recently debuted on NXT television as LA Knight, is a former NWA television champion and has competed against Drew McIntyre, John Morrison, and Jeff Hardy. So now we get into all the list, all right? Let's do it in order. Let's start it off. Let me just play this, pause this. And why almost immediately do I have something wrong here? Hold on a second. I know why. Is this, I just want to make sure that this is Angela Arnold. Yeah, I see what they did. Hold on. There we go. Let's fast forward two of these. All right. Hang on a second. There we go. Let's see. Why are these not coming up? Hold on a second. I'd like to show you the photos. I mean, I have them here. Let's see. Let's try this again. Hands hit okay. Ah, there we go. Ah, there we go. There we go. Nice. Nice. Okay. Pause, you asshole. There we go. Nice. Okay, good. We're all set. Here we go. Bronson Rechsteiner, the son of former WCW and WWE tag team champion Rick Steiner, comes to the WWE from the gridiron at 6 feet tall, 230 pounds. He is an All-American running back from Kennesaw State University. Interesting. Only 6 foot tall. Kind of short. I mean, I'm not knocking it in any way. The guy is a monster. He is solid as a rock. But, yeah, I was a little surprised when I saw that he was only 6 feet tall. But, hey, man, you know, he comes from a great lineage in the Steiners. So we will see what happens. Next on the list, there we go. Kira Magnum Forster, known to wrestling fans as Taya Valkyrie, is an 11-year veteran of the Squared Circle, a classically trained ballerina. Forster learned wrestling under Lance Storm before breaking out in Mexico for the AAA promotion. She has competed all around the world since. You know what I find very interesting right off the bat? When they talked about Eli Drake, they talked about Taya Valkyrie, no mention of Impact Wrestling whatsoever. And yes, I know the question you're going to ask. Do you think Impact Wrestling working with AEW is the reason why? Yeah, I do believe that. I do believe that, without a doubt. I mean, you had WWE working out little deals with Impact in the past. Can we use a little footage? We'll pay you for some rights to use a little footage. Now, you know, when Jon Moxley did an interview earlier this week and said WWE and AEW will never do work together, he is the most realistic about it. We got into it in pretty good detail yesterday. Remember the restaurant analogy? AEW does not consider WWE competition. WWE is a billion-dollar company. AEW is not. AEW knows that they are obviously has a very tiny footprint in the world of pro wrestling, but a bright future, no doubt about it. WWE, on the other hand, will never lift the stranglehold. They will always look at any wrestling company with any financial backing as competition. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the analogies I've used in the past, but they are not going to sit back. Oh, they can have a little bit. We can hire everyone. So they let them have their fun. No. WWE is not going to do anything to fuck AEW, but AEW is considered enemy number one for WWE. Not personal, business. It's not personal, it's business. And that's the God honest truth. So when people try to do this kumbaya stuff like, oh, can't we have one big super show for charity? Can't we do this for the love of this? Most of those people don't even understand business. Unfortunately, everybody, seriously, unless you work for a charity organization, you know, oh, thank you. May the Lord be with you. And I'm not trying to mock them, but, you know, if you've ever been in legit, serious business, especially when there's other people in the same field, it's competition. You can respect each other, but you, no. That's the way it is. That's how it goes. You know, business is not always, you know, cake and ice cream. And it can be very cold sometimes. But that's why, with all due respect, WWE is making billions. And some other wrestling companies have yet to do anything in over a year with COVID. So let's move on. Let's move on. There we go. Angela Arnold trained for the Squared Circle under WWE Hall of Famer Booker T. Competing as AQA, she's impressed in action for Booker T's Reality of Wrestling promotion as well as Shimmer. Wow, whoever wrote that. Really, seriously. She's impressed in action. Very poor grammar. But she's wrestled for Booker T's Reality of Wrestling and Shimmer. And there is a little bit of her work on YouTube if you want to go check it out. All right, Parker Boudreau of Winter Garden, Florida, stands 6'4", weighs 300 pounds. The big man was an offensive lineman for the University of Central Florida and has caught the eye of Paul Heyman on social media. Yes, that's all they said. Anthony Henry is a standout competitor from Evolve Wrestling and has competed on the WWE Network. He's been in the ring with superstars like the Street Profits, current NXT Tag Team Champions Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, Nash Carter of MSK, and Roderick Strong. I agree with you 100%, Danielson. AEW is the minor leagues to Vince. Yeah. In Vince's eyes, AEW is the minor leagues. I don't look as AEW as a minor league promotion. When you get $175 million deal with a cable network and you have that kind of followership on social media, countries, and merchandise and everything that's going on, that is not minor leagues. Yes, if you want to compare it to like baseball, this is like the Yankees, who may be worth $1 billion, and maybe the Toronto Blue Jays, which may be worth 1/20th of that. Obviously, they're both involved in wrestling, so they're not the minor leagues. But again, WWE, no matter how big AEW is right now or how little they are, WWE will view them as a threat. As a threat. You know, I don't think WWE is overly concerned right now. You see their insistence on having certain people on NXT and not going against the grain. But you have definitely seen a shift in the style of NXT over the last year and a half since AEW has actually gone on the air. So, that's Anthony Henry. Let's move on. A lot of signings, but very impressive. And I know what some of you are going to say. You look at all these people they signed. AEW could have signed some of these people. Why didn't they? Well, you know, some people have also pointed out WWE had the opportunity to sign people like Thunder Rosa and others and passed them up or offered them shit deals. So it's not like, oh, just AEW dropped the ball. Trust me, WWE's dropped the ball with a few people as well. Chance Barrow, better known to fans as Harlem Bravado, is a veteran of the independent scene. The North Carolina native has found success as a singles and tag team competitor and has made his way to Japan to compete for pro wrestling Noah. There you go. Next. Great match with Io Shirai on Wednesday, by the way. Teresa Serrano, formerly known as Lacey Ryan, now competes as Zoe Stark, debuted for NXT in the first ever Women's Dusty Road Tag Team Classic. Her intense in-ring style has made her a standout for the Black and Gold brand in such a short order. Christian Brigham is a Massachusetts native with 6 years of experience in the ring under the name Christian Casanova. Simple, to the point. I still think they got to tweak her name. Priscilla Kelly, now going by Gigi Dolan, competed in the 2018 Mae Young Classic and returned to WWE for the first ever Women's Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic in NXT. I still say, little French twist to her. You know how she dresses. Gigi Dolan sounds very blah and bland. I could picture her wearing what she wears. Very sexy outfits with a little bit of an accent. Gigi Dolin. I am Gigi Dolin. Now, obviously, I'm not going to sound sexy. I certainly don't look it. But I could picture her doing Gigi Dolin. It just sounds sexy. Maybe they'll do it. I doubt it. All right, I'm going to reveal mine early. We already know about Parker Boudreaux. We already know about Taya Valkyrie, Zoe Stark. This guy is my sleeper hit. This guy, I think, has the potential. I think he'll grow facial hair. I think his head of hair will be changed dramatically. This guy, I think, is going to be a sleeper hit. Drew Casper is the brother of Jacob Casper, who joined the WWE Performance Center in October 2020. The 285-pounder was a two-time All-American heavyweight wrestler for Otterbein University, or Otterbein, and was the number one seeded wrestler in the NCAA Division III tournament before it was canceled due to COVID. Notice the amateur wrestling background. This guy, for some reason, I'm drawn to this guy. We'll see what happens. Brianna Cota, formerly known as Elena Black, now known as Cora Jade, is a 19-year-old Illinois native who's been competing in the ring since 2018 and who debuted for NXT in the Women's Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. We're almost done with the list, by the way. Christian Hubble is a former... Whoa, wait a minute. Okay. Christian Hubble is a former college cheerleader who has broken out on the independent scene. I'm not laughing cheerleader. I just got thrown for a loop for a second. I don't think that's wrong. The Tennessee native made a name for himself under the moniker Blake Christian in promotions like Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and Game Changer Wrestling. Yeah, that actually does make sense. I seen him once or twice in GCW. I didn't know about the cheerleader stuff, but cheerleaders can be male. You know, I'm not trying to put a sexist thing. I just didn't know about the cheerleading background. So, it kind of looks generic, but you know what? I can't go back. Just think of the Undertaker's look when he was very, very young. Actually, kind of look like, I don't know if I could, maybe I could. Yeah, let's go. I'm not saying he looks like The Undertaker, but when you see kind of like the orange hair and, you know, anybody can tweak their look into something different. So we'll see what happens. All right. Next on the list, Matrick Belton played Division I football for the University of South Carolina, has attended training camps for the NFL Philadelphia Eagles. He is prepared for the rigors of the pro wrestling ring by training at Combat Zone Wrestling's Academy in New Jersey. Cameron Clay has been competing in the ring 4 years under the name Cameron Rene, I think it is, and has been in the ring with people the likes such as Shotzi Blackheart. And I apologize if I get a name a little mispronounced here and there. Obviously, they're not household names, but I want to give them a little respect and feature them. I think we only have three or four. Three left. Joe Arriola is a 25-year-old amateur wrestler from Oak Park, Illinois. An undefeated state champion and national champion in high school, Ariola wrestled for the University of Buffalo in college, qualifying for the NCAA tournament in 2016. Taylor Grado of Clearwater Beach, Florida, Grado, competed as Avery Taylor for promotions like Evolve and Shine. Keep an eye on her as well. She's actually pretty damn good. And she obviously has a huge future ahead. So keep Avery Taylor on your radar as well. And finally for this list, I know some of you know her. Carissa Rivera of New Jersey has made a name for herself on the indie wrestling scene from promotions like New and Women's Wrestling Revolution. So there you go. So out of all the names, out of all the faces that I just showed, and you see them right now, other than the obvious names that we are familiar with already, who stands out to you? Is there anybody that you have basically has caught your eye over the last week? I'm curious if any of you out there. I'm very curious to see how Priscilla Kelly does. But, yeah, I'd love to see posted in the chat, or you could post it in the comment section later if you get this on the download. Zoe Stark, yeah, Zoe Stark has got it. You know, the thing is, and we talked about this yesterday, I don't know if Zoe Stark is going to be able to leapfrog so many women in NXT, but she definitely should be able to make a name for herself, without a doubt. Parker is going to be the guy. I mean, seriously, barring, and you know what? I'm still not counting out Ridge Holland. Ridge Holland, if this guy recovers, I can't wait to see 5 years from now what Ridge Holland could do. You think about it, if Ridge Holland can stay healthy and put it together, and then you have Parker Boudreaux, if he puts it together, I mean, my God, just think about that. You know, again, you see all these names. Not everybody is going to make it, obviously. Some will end up getting released, and maybe they make a name for themselves in another promotion. But, you know, this has the potential that you look back a couple of years from now, you look back on this week, and people will be like, oh, my God, do you remember all those signees that they made? So I don't care about his tats, Twix. I don't have tattoos. You know, I have tattoos of wrinkles and scars. You know, I don't see, that's what I mean about social media and stuff like that. I don't have tattoos, so I'm not going to start judging other people's, you know, choice of tats. You know, obviously something that looks horrible, I mean, it looks horrible, but you know, people have different meanings for different things, you know, so I'm not going to criticize it. Now, I want to just throw this out there for 2 seconds and we move on. A lot of you wanted my thoughts on the Wrestling Observer 2020 year-end awards. I definitely needed a slug to give you my overall thoughts on this. Wow, we're already at 43 minutes. Holy shit. Holy shit. All right. 2020, 43 minutes. I'm doing timestamps tonight, by the way. I didn't do timestamps Wednesday because we really just focused on the recaps. You know, what would I have done? 2 timestamps, AEW, NXT? Okay. I'm going to say this blunted to the point. Anybody out there that is getting triggered about the Wrestling Observer Awards choosing some of their choices, Feud of the Year, FTR versus Young Bucks. Do I think that was Feud of the Year? No. Tony Khan, Promoter, Booker of the Year. Do I think under COVID, either him or Vince McMahon, whether you like it or not, comes down to 2 people. But I am 1,000% serious of what I'm about to say. To all, and I'm not talking about regular wrestling fans, because you have the right to debate and discuss and it's not, but websites, bloggers, podcasters, you know, people that run things, if they're getting triggered over this, they really should not be doing what they're doing. They're an absolute goof, and I'll tell you why. I am a subscriber to the Wrestling Observer newsletter. Those 2020 year-end awards are voted by the subscribers. It's not voted by Meltzer. It's not voted by Brian Alvarez. And the reason why I get annoyed at these goofs is because all year long, when the attention starts drifting away from them, you always see them write this usual bullshit on Twitter or Facebook that, oh, you know, at the end of the day, we're all wrestling fans and we all love different things. And that's why it's so awesome to be a wrestling fan, that I don't have to like what you like and you don't have to like what I like. And you may like this and I may not, but we're all wrestling fans and that makes us a great family. Fuck you. Because these people that voted, and I did not vote because I just didn't want to spend the time. I was lazy about it. But everybody that voted had the same right to choose who they like as you do. So when people out there write this kumbaya, we're all, at the end of the day, we're all wrestling fans. And, you know, I know we joke and I know we do this, but at the end of the day, we all love wrestling and that's what matters. What's wrong with you people? And here's another thing. Oh, my God. Bray Wyatt got voted the worst, most overrated wrestler. 200 people, 300 people, 400 people voted, and people are doing one-hour podcast episodes over that? The fuck is wrong with you? These are regular wrestling fans voting. Now, understand something. What is so great about my family here, and many of you out there are my family, not by blood, a lot of us are in agreement. Give Paul White a chance. Give Big Show a chance. You know, WWE doesn't see value in him anymore. Up-and-coming company. Guy's a good guy. Works hard. Been in the business 25 years. Well-liked. Well-respected. You know, we don't know exactly where he fits in for AEW. We're willing to give him a chance. If AEW screws it up, he screws it up, whatever it is, then we criticize it. But for the most part, a majority of you here want to give AEW and Paul White a chance. He shouldn't have to leave wrestling because the company that interests him, that is interested in him the most, is the company you dislike. So my point is, there's going to be other shows out there where a majority of their viewers or listeners do not like Paul White. They do not like AEW. And a majority of their listeners or viewers will feel totally different than us. See where I'm going with this? That Meltzer's group, a majority of them favor AEW. A majority of them like Japanese wrestling. A majority of them do follow other content out there. And that's why they vote the way they do. I've said this a trillion times in the past. If you don't like Dave Meltzer, no one is forcing you to pay attention to him. I never liked Bruce Mitchell. Other than these jerk-off comments that he made recently about Brody Lee and then that awful comment that he made last week about the Elimination Chamber. You know, I might have mentioned his name three times in 19 years, 20 years. If I don't want to watch or listen to this guy, I don't. Wade Keller, do I keep on the radar? Did you hear what this asshole had to say this week? Did you hear what this idiot had to say this week? Can you believe what this moron had to say? This and that? No, if I'm not interested in following this guy, I don't pay attention to him. Why do these people insist on giving attention to Dave Meltzer and the Observer Newsletter and Brian Alvarez if they don't like him? Because at the end of the day, and I know it sounds so horrible, but it's so true, these people are lonely. And that's not the, oh, you live in your parents' basement joke. No, these people are legitimately lonely and want attention for every little thing. If this pen has a defect in it, look, this pen, oh my God, you know, it's broken. It's a, and they'll tweet about, oh, anything, they'll write about anything to try to start a conversation. Benjamin thinks Meltzer is a goof. I totally respect you. I disagree with you. I totally respect you. But the thing about Benjamin is Benjamin don't talk about Meltzer at all. So these awards, these were voted by the fans that a lot of people say, we're all wrestling fans at the end of the day. I'm going to read you the winners. Not going to get into the number of votes, but keep in mind, some of these winners got 50 votes. People are being triggered about something that had 50 votes. I could see if it's millions, 50. And I disagree with a lot of these. Maybe one episode in the future, if enough of you would like for me to get into it, I'll get into these a little bit more detail. But I'm going to read you the list because it got so much attention. Wrestler of the Year, Jon Moxley. Female Wrestler, remember, this is 2020. Wrestler of the Year, Jon Moxley. Female Wrestler of the Year, Bayley. Tag Team of the Year, The Young Bucks. Most Outstanding Wrestler of the Year, Kenny Omega. Most Improved Wrestler of the Year, Britt Baker. I'm not going to keep saying of the year. You know 2020. Most Improved Wrestler, Britt Baker. Most Underrated Wrestler, Ricochet. Most Overrated Wrestler, Bray Wyatt. Rookie of the Year, Pat McAfee. Best Non-Wrestler, Taz. High Flyer, Rey Fénix. Technical Wrestler of the Year, Zack Sabre Jr. Most Charismatic, MJF. The Move of the Year, Kenny Omega's One-Winged Angel. Feud of the Year, Moxley versus Eddie Kingston. Worst Feud of the Year, Bray Wyatt versus Braun Strowman. Match of the Year, Kenny Omega and Hangman Page versus the Young Bucks for the AEW tag titles at Revolution. Worst Match of the Year, Bray Wyatt versus Braun Strowman in the Wyatt Swamp Fight. Best Weekly Show, Dynamite. Worst Weekly Show, Raw. Promoter of the Year, Tony Khan. Best Promotion of the Year, AEW. Worst Promotion of the Year, WWE. Best Major Show of the Year, AEW Revolution, last year. Worst Major Show of the Year, WWE Super Showdown. Gimmick of the Year, Orange Cassidy. Worst Gimmick of the Year, The Fiend. Best Announcer of the Year, Excalibur. Worst Announcer, Michael Cole. Most Disgusting Promotional Tactic of the Year, WWE Firing Employees During a Pandemic. Best On Interviews, Eddie Kingston. Best Documentary, Dark Side of the Ring. Now, some of these I have no problem with. Some of these are ridiculous. Again, I feel bad for everybody who has been fired during the pandemic. But they're an entertainment company. I've said it a trillion times before. You have that many people on the roster, and you're not touring, and you're forced to have one location, limited crew. You don't waste millions because it's politically correct. Anybody out there would agree on that. That's how I feel. So anyway, so those are the choices that triggered a lot of people out there. All right. So now, what would you like for me to get into next? Would you like for me to cover SmackDown? Would you like for me to do the AEW NXT Quarter Hour ratings? I will let our live friends tuning in right now to vote. Usually gets split down the middle. And as always, I ask everybody out there, if you're enjoying the show, definitely smash that like button. If you haven't subscribed yet, subscribe, because we're going to start uploading individual clips. We're going to start, I'm telling you, there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes that we're really going to, I mean, I'm very excited to see 3-4 months from now where everything is. All right, we got ratings, SmackDown, ratings, SmackDown, ratings, SmackDown. You see, it's back and forth, back and forth. It's my show. All right, let's talk ratings. SmackDown will be very easy to cover. It was a fun show. It flowed nicely. I like what they did with Apollo Crews tonight. We'll get into that, obviously. You could see little seeds being planted for WrestleMania. It's going to be interesting to see what happens at Fastlane. Obviously, nothing was decided tonight. So let's get into the ratings, and then we'll talk about SmackDown. One thing I will tell you about this week's AEW rating, I have covered the quarter-hour breakdowns every week, I didn't forget about Super Chats. Okay, if you'd like, you know what, let's definitely get into Super Chats, and then we'll get into the ratings. So Fly says, the only thing that could hold Parker back is maybe his mental fortitude. Hopefully he can handle the expectations because he is still very young. Let me tell you something, So Fly. I don't know if you follow his Twitter. This guy is confident and cocky as fuck. But his cockiness comes off friendly. You know what I mean? He doesn't... I don't know if any of you out there feel this way. I don't think Parker Boudreau, I don't think he comes off as a prick. You know, he comes off as extremely confident. He thinks he's going to be a major star in wrestling. And that attitude you like, if you think that you're going to do it, you know, that gives you the incentive and the drive to back that shit up. If you have doubts about yourself, that's when people, you know, want to take their ball and go home. Maybe I'm not ready for this. Maybe I don't this. Maybe I thought I was wrong. This guy, it's, I'm sure the pressure is building for him. I mean, he's starting to really get an aura about himself that he knows he's got to back that shit up in the ring. But I don't know. We will see what happens, man. But he definitely comes off as extremely cocky and confident. But he comes off as, you know, he doesn't come off as a douchebag. That's probably the best way I could put it. Anthony Diaz calls it the most ridiculous awards ever. You know, like I said, I have no problem anyone out there that thinks all of the choices are ridiculous or stupid. My point about it is that if we did a year-end awards voting and we had 200, 300, 400 people voting and we went down our list and all of your choices were totally different than the Observer's, I don't think subscribers of the Observer newsletter are all going to get triggered at what the Donzilla Army feels about things. And people out there, like I said, these sites and these podcasts and everything, like, I repeat this, you know, these are regular wrestling fans voting on this stuff. And all of that garbage about we're all wrestling fans gets thrown right out the window when you get triggered because someone chooses someone or something that you don't agree with or you don't like. So, oh, thank you, Sam. They left out the best podcaster of the year, the Don Tony. So you can't say that out loud. You know about that, you know, that stigma about what we do. You know, we're evil. We're evil. I mean, we blow away. You see some of these podcasts out there that get all this crazy attention from these promotions, and you tune in and they got 93 people. You know, that's the way it is. That's the way it is. You know, a lot of people out there in this day and age want to be treated with kid gloves, that try to treat everything with cake and ice cream, that every day is epic and unbelievable. And that, you know, it's a nice to have that outlook, but you also got to keep things in perspective. You know, I mean, I brought it up Wednesday, Karrion Kross versus Santos Escobar. I love the street fight. But one thing that I noticed was, you know, he uses a lot of the, you know, those, the dragon suplex. He did it repeatedly over and over and over and over and over again. And that seems like a go-to. It's almost like, I don't want to say robotic, but you know, if you got a little, just that suplex, fall away suplex, fall away. And you know, some people out there like, wow, you know, it's pretty fucked up to say, especially somebody, you know, that, you know, likes what you do and vice versa. No, you just, I tell it like it is. A lot of people out there can't handle a little criticism. I don't do it to be an asshole, and I'm just observing. I'm giving an opinion. There's a lot of people out there. The Saito suplex, SoFly. All right, so we go official, the Saito suplex. I think some people agree. A little bit too much. Not a big deal. not a big deal. In the overall picture, you know, there's no issue. And hey, I'm not the one in the ring. So how I feel about it, you know, probably means nada. It was an awesome match. We will get into the quarter hour ratings now. All right. One thing I will tell you about AEW's rating. In all of the months and months and months that I've been covering the quarter hour breakdowns, this past Wednesday was the most consistent viewership throughout the night. Anthony Diaz, what award would Mike Johnson win? Biggest, littlest troll. Might be the little. I don't have anger towards Mike Johnson anymore. Bob Ryder passed. You know, that really put a little, couple of things in perspective. Like, you know what, man, life's too short to have these dumb little grudges. I mean, will I ever shake hands or break bread with the guy? Probably not. You know, we saw him at big event last year. Mish and I hung out, and we walked right past Mike Johnson. And I'm like, Mish, here comes Mike Johnson. And wouldn't look us right in the eye. Looked down and kept walking. And it was a little sad. I mean, if he would have stuck his hand out, I would have shook it. You know, but I really can't rip the guy like I used to be honest with you. So now we focus on the ratings. This week was the most consistent for AEW yet. They did not lose a plethora of viewers at all. They didn't have any big jumps. They didn't have any big declines. When we go over the rating later, you're going to see that almost the entire night was like this. You didn't have this. It was pretty much consistent the whole night. Some of these numbers are going to surprise people, too. AEW. Oh, and by the way, I came this close of nailing each one. My prediction for AEW was 828, and they scored an 831. So I was off by only 3,000. NXT, my prediction was 740. They scored 734. So both I missed by this much. Another thing that AEW did this week that they haven't been doing is they actually increased their viewers for hour two. Most of the recent weeks, they have lost viewers in hour two. This time around, they actually gained some viewers. Little buffering. Hang on, I'm just monitoring it. Just give me one second. I'm sorry for those on the audio only. There was a little buffering for a second. So that's, I know a lot of you don't care about this. This is like behind the scenes stuff. But this Wednesday, Verizon is coming here to install Fios. I've had Time Warner / Spectrum for the last 23 years. Verizon Fios was not available in my complex until a month ago. I got a call last week, hey, you want Fios? I could get it? Yeah. They're giving me the gigabyte plan. So it's like the upload and download speed is the same, so I could have fucking 80 webcams going and stuff like, well, I have no buffering anymore. Zero. Nothing. So Wednesday, it all changes. I'm telling you. So anyway, AEW. Interesting week with the numbers. Hour one, 818. Hour two, 843 for a composite of 831. Opening quarter. Now, think 831 is the average. Opening quarter, John Moxley versus Ryan Nemeth. John Moxley's promo. And then the replay of Lance Archer and Ray Phoenix going at it last week. That opened up at 832. Right on the nose with their average. Opening quarter, 8:32. Quarter two, the Young Bucks taking pictures with their dad in the back. Ricky Starks and Brian Cage versus Brian Pillman Jr. and Griff Garrison. That quarter hour dropped 67,000 viewers to 765,000. Now, what's interesting about this, NXT beat AEW in that second quarter. It wasn't the first quarter where people may have left the USA Network on. This was the second quarter. NXT beat AEW in the second quarter. Now, I went back and watched some of AEW today to make sure where Sting fit in on the ratings. Was it the second quarter or the third quarter? And unfortunately, for some of you out there that would have enjoyed it, Sting's appearance and Darby Allin coming down on the cable, that actually was the beginning of quarter three. So that bleeded into the third quarter. If it would have been part of quarter two, then we would have said that Tyler Rust beat Sting in the ratings. We can't do that, though. We can't do that. So quarter three, Sting, Darby Allin confronting Team Taz, that backstage interview segment with Miro, Penelope Ford, Kip Sabian, and Tony Schiavone, and then the match with Jake Hager versus Brandon Cutler. That quarter hour increased 75,000 viewers to 840. So they got back all their viewers from the second quarter. Quarter four, which was MJF and Chris Jericho beating up Papa Buck. You had the hype of next week's match with Shaq and Jade Cargill versus Cody and Red Velvet. And the first half of Adam Hangman Page versus Isaiah Cassidy. That rating dropped by 5,000 viewers to 835. What happened with Daugherty? What happened with Daugherty? Hey, Daugherty, all you had to do is look up the dates. You sound like those podcasters and writers. Leave him alone. Daugherty's okay. He's all right. He's okay, Benjamin. Daugherty's good people. So, the second half of Adam Hangman Page versus Isaiah Cassidy and the backstage promo in that whatever Kenny Omega was building and that freaking saw that wouldn't stop making noise, that quarter hour increased only 6,000 viewers. So they lose 5, they gain 6. They lose 60, they gain 60. That's pretty much the trend the whole night. So they scored 841, an increase of 6,000. Quarter number 6, Jurassic Express's promo, the updates on the women's eliminator tournament, the match with Britt Baker versus Nyla Rose, that rating increased 25,000 viewers to 866. AEW should be very happy with that quarter hour with the women's wrestling. The hype for next week's AEW episode, the updates to the Revolution pay-per-view, the very beginning of Lance Archer versus Rey Fénix. A lot of people are going to be surprised at this. Their rating went down 28,000 viewers to 838,000. And then the last quarter, which was the bulk of Rey Fénix versus Lance Archer, that quarter hour dropped another 11,000 viewers to 827. So those two quarter hours that featured Rey Fénix versus Lance Archer lost 40,000 viewers. I think we mentioned that Wednesday, that I don't think some people out there realize that although Lance Archer is my favorite, and although Rey Fénix is a monster in the ring, as far as the main event, I don't know how many people would actually be attracted to that. So anyway, so let's go over it. Remember, 831 is the average. Ready? 832, 765, 840, 835, 841, 866, 838, 827. They started and they ended with almost the same viewership. That main event was fun, Twix. Just didn't get the numbers I thought it would get. So now we get into NXT. Very interesting. Hour one, 763,000 viewers. Hour two, 705,000 viewers for a composite of 734,000 viewers. Opening quarter, the match between Dexter Lumis and Johnny Gargano, that opening quarter scored 808,000 viewers. Pretty good. Quarter two, which was the video package of MSK, the injury angle, Tyler Rust versus Leon Ruff, and William Regal talking to Zoe Stark about the match proposal, and the first segment with Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes had three segments during the night. This was the first one. That quarter hour dropped 17,000 viewers to 791. Remember, that quarter was the only quarter that beat AEW the whole night, but it did go down 17,000 viewers. quarter three, which was Io Shirai versus Zoe Stark. That quarter hour dropped another 36,000 viewers to 745. The end of their match, Toni Storm coming out and challenging Io Shirai, the way, trying to leave the building, and the second segment of Cameron Grimes with that former WNBA player, I don't remember her name right now, that quarter hour dropped another 39,000 viewers to 706. So if you look at it, every segment with Cameron Grimes dropped. I don't know if it's his fault, but wait till we get to a quarter hour in a moment. Oh, my God. So that quarter hour dropped another 39,000 viewers to 706. Quarter four, Xia Li versus Casey Catanzaro. And then the preview for next week's women's tag team title match between Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez versus Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. That quarter hour increased 37,000 viewers to 743. So it was a very good week for women's wrestling on both shows. Last week, it was one of the worst. This week, they saw increases during those quarter hours. So WWE increased 37,000 to 743. Here is where WWE's really got to start reevaluating the grizzled young veterans. I have nothing personal against them. Some of you out there think I have some personal issues with them because I have pointed out for months that their ratings on NXT are pitiful. Ever-Rise territory, bad, pathetic. Their match with Drake Maverick and Killian Dane Wednesday dropped 120,000 viewers to 623. Now, if you're going to say to me that those viewers left to go watch AEW, not the case. You look up the numbers. They lost 120,000 viewers. The Cameron Grimes, the final segment, was in that quarter hour as well, but it kind of bleeded into the next one. But grizzled young veterans, once again, some of the shittiest numbers of the night. WWE's got to reevaluate this. This is consistent. This is not just up, down, up, down. Maybe it depends on who their opponent is. They consistently get garbage numbers. So they have to. That's rough. I agree, man. That is rough. Not Leon rough, but rough. So they dropped all the way to 623. Quarter seven. The hype for, once again, for next week's women's tag match. And the first half of Karrion Kross versus Santos Escobar, they should be happy with this. That quarter hour increased 86,000 viewers to 709. So a lot of those viewers that they lost during Killian Dane, Drake Maverick versus Grizzled Young Veterans, they got back in that quarter hour. So it went back up to 709. And then the final quarter, which was the second half of Santos Escobar versus Karrion Kross, and the very beginning of Adam Cole segment, because remember, a lot of Adam Cole segment was the overrun. So the last 2-3 minutes was Adam Cole. That quarter hour, the final one, increased 34,000 viewers to 743. So you could see what was happening in NXT that night. So let's review. Their average is 734. This is how the quarters went. 791, 745, 706, 743, 623, 709, 743. So they closed pretty close to what their average was the whole night, as did AEW. But AEW had pretty much the most consistent audience that they have had to date. They really pretty much kept their audience. You didn't have, other than one quarter where they dropped a little bit, they regained it the next quarter, and they pretty much were right in the middle the whole night. So there you go. That is your quarter hours. By the way, somebody brought this to my attention. It actually looks pretty good. Might want to check this out. WWE on their network, whenever they do like documentaries, it's always about wrestling and wrestlers. They're actually premiering a documentary that has nothing to do with wrestling. It's narrated by Beth Phoenix, but it is a documentary called Heaven. And it's about a high school wrestler that became the first female athlete to win a boys' state wrestling championship. I saw the preview for it. It actually looks pretty good. I know some of you are going to say, well, you know, it kind of coincides with, you know, what was passed in government this week. No, I don't think so. It's just a really good story. And it's actually getting some really high praise from people who have seen it already. So you might want to go check that out. It doesn't have anything to do with wrestling other than the fact that Beth Phoenix is the commentator. Shout out to Emily. Kevin, how could you call it boring? How could you call it boring? We haven't even watched it yet. So anyway, let's talk about SmackDown. Let's call it a night. We've done an hour and 15 minutes already. So we'll be right around the 90-minute mark for tonight. But don't forget, if you're around Monday night, right after Raw, you could join Mish and I. We will be doing Breakfast Soup Raw on Monday. So join us 11.05 p.m. And again, for anybody that's looking to pick up that shirt, it'll be officially launched on Sunday. So let's talk about SmackDown a little bit. Now, for some of you out there during SmackDown that didn't know what Seth Rollins was talking about with that letter, I took a copy of it. I'll show it to you later on because not everybody read the letter, you know, storyline purposes, what he sent to WWE. It's goofy, but we'll share it. So SmackDown opens up, you know, recapping pretty much what we saw last week. Roman Reigns, Jey Uso, Paul Heyman. Piped in "you suck" chants as they've been doing. You know, now WWE is directing the narrative as far as who gets booed and who gets cheered. You see them piping in the extra boos for Otis, piping in the extra boos for Apollo Crews, which I'm fine with. I'm fine with. But they better be pretty confident as far as how the WWE fans truly feel about some of these segments, because you're going to have live fans back before you know it, and not just WrestleMania. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to push a certain narrative for a bunch of months. And then, you know, you get live fans again, and their reactions are no. What are you going to do? Pipe in, you know, the "you suck" chants over the live fan? Don't be surprised if that happens. That's one thing, whether you like it or not. And you know, back in March or April of last year, this was something that I was saying WWE has to do. Under the special circumstances, they can't just have that soccer noise. Remember that awful soccer noise, that consistent buzz that no matter what, the worst example of it is when Bayley turned on Sasha Banks. And just listen to the reaction in the back. It was just that generic soccer noise, that as if everybody went to buy a Knish and didn't react to it at all. If that segment would have happened now, you would have had all that soundboard, "you suck," "boo," this, they just, WWE has improved dramatically. Under the circumstances with COVID, I give it a pass. Once you get live fans in attendance again, you know, you can't try to keep pushing those narratives if the fans are not buying it, because that is going to come out awful. And shout out to Mikey, who is in Thunderdome again tonight. And he said, especially when, was it Apollo Crews? No, Otis. They told everybody in the headpiece, everybody was in Thunderdome, "all right, everybody, give those thumbs down. So some of those reactions that you saw, and I've heard it myself, I've been on Thunderdome four or five times. They will tell the fans, "all right, everybody, you know, when blah, 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 blah comes out, make sure you do this. When Daniel Bryan goes out, make sure you do those yes things." And then as soon as his music hits and you hear it, "all right, everybody, now, yes." Yeah, that's what they do. So anyway, SmackDown opens up with Paul Heyman, Jey Uso, and Roman Reigns. And, you know, Roman Reigns basically saying that Edge ruined an almost perfect night, the Elimination Chamber. I was fine with that. What I didn't like next is it felt like the Randy Orton storyline with Edge, the Kevin Owens storyline with Roman Reigns. basically Roman Reigns bringing up Edge's family should go home. You know, to me, that sounds like Randy Orton cutting the same promo to Edge. Then he's talking about family again, and it sounded like Roman Reigns cutting the same promo towards Kevin Owens. Just recycled. Daniel Bryan comes out, and he says that Roman Reigns was being a coward by not wrestling in the Elimination Chamber match itself. Okay, I'm fine with that. But then they do the storyline where Daniel Bryan says that having a match right after the chamber and taking advantage of somebody who is down is cowardly. And my immediate thought was, you cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase. Miz just cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase. So throwing it out, again, this is storyline. This is WWE telling him to say this, but thought that was pretty stupid because Edge's whole character back then was the ultimate opportunist. The briefcase creates a thousand Edges because everybody with the briefcase basically turns into Edge at some point in the, with their possession of the briefcase. They cash in usually when someone is down. So Daniel Bryan cutting that promo tonight, it's not his fault, but I thought it was kind of stupid. And basically, we get more recycled stuff. Jey Uso gets pissed off and nails Daniel Bryan. In the back, Jey Uso is apologizing for jumping the gun and doing what he did. And Roman Reigns is like, don't worry about it. It's okay. As long as you finish the job. How many times have we heard that? Where Jey Uso attacks, I'm sorry, you know, I should have not. That's okay. As long as you finish the job. Same shit again. So I liked the openings overall, but if you felt like we've seen this before, we've seen it before. And yes, Sam, that's the best way to cash in. Any of us would do that. We then have a segment with Edge, Adam Pearce, and Sonya Deville. And I tell you, I was kind of like blah with this segment too. Because apparently the idea was a match was going to take place at Fastlane, which would have been a tag team match. Daniel Bryan and Edge versus Jey Uso and Roman Reigns. And basically what happened is Daniel Bryan, when he came out, challenged Roman Reigns to a title match. So Adam Pearce decides that instead of a tag team match at Fastlane, if Daniel Bryan can beat Jey Uso tonight, then Daniel Bryan gets a title shot at Fastlane. That sounds awful lot like card subject to change, Roman Reigns versus Kevin Owens. It's not anybody's fault because Fastlane obviously is the stop in the road before getting to the destination. We talked about that last year too. Obviously, Roman Reigns has to fight somebody at Fastlane, so this is the bump in the road. But Edge basically saying to Adam Pearce that he feels it's disrespectful to put Daniel Bryan in a position where he gets a title shot before WrestleMania, where Edge is already challenging the champion. Edge feels that that's disrespectful. And just in storyline purposes, I'm saying to myself, so what match is supposed to take place at Mania? I mean, at Fastlane. I mean, think about that. So it was just, I don't know, it just felt kind of like stupid, you know, setting this up this way. You know, Jey Uso, you know, gets a match with Daniel Bryan. And then if Daniel Bryan wins, he gets the title shot. Edge is uber offended by it. What happened to Edge cutting promos last week in the Elimination Chamber that, you know, look, Daniel, if you win, I'd be honored to face you. If you win, Cesaro, I'd be honored to face you. If you win, I'd be honored to face you. So if somebody loses the title, I know what you're going to say. Well, Edge wants to take on Roman Reigns. I get that. But to feel like, oh, totally disrespected in it, I thought it was a little bit overdone. Yes, Larry, Fastlane is kind of the bathroom break of pay-per-views. You know nothing major is going to change, although with Miz getting the title, it throws a little, you know, loop. Oh, and by the way, how'd you all like Vic Joseph and Corey Graves this week talking about the idea of Brock Lesnar coming back for WrestleMania? I will pop if that happens, because I've been saying it for 3 or 4 months. Let it be Drew versus Lesnar, or Drew versus Lashley versus Lesnar. No guarantee it's going to happen, but if it does, that's going to be sweet. So, because you know Bad Bunny and Damian Priest are going to fight Miz and Morrison. I mean, I know some of you still think it's going to be Bad Bunny versus Miz, which I don't know how I feel about that. I think the tag team match would be better, especially if Bad Bunny is like a deer in headlights, you know, getting, there is pressure. You know, I understand he's a multimillionaire and has performed and has, you know, got millions of fans, but you're in the ring and you're doing that on the fly. You know, there is no room for error. It's not like in a music studio, cut, let's redo it, let's do this, let's auto-tune, let's change this, let's tweak that. No, this is live, one take, you screw it up, you're done. Otis and Chad Gable beating Dominic and Rey Mysterio. Otis getting very aggressive with Rey Mysterio, where even Chad Gable is trying to calm him down a little bit. I like this match. Otis with the second rope splash onto Rey Mysterio for the win. I like where this is going. Some of you out there want Mandy Rose to be interjected in this storyline again. Some of you out there think that maybe this storyline should have pissed off Otis because Otis, you know, is got his feelings hurt. You know, I know what you're going to say. That happened a long time ago. I get it. But to just out of nowhere have a, you know, when they were saying today in the commentary that, oh, Otis has gotten an aggression we've never seen before, that's not true. I mean, when they cut Mandy Rose's hair and they did the whole thing with Sonya Deville. Remember Miz and Morrison in the back cracking jokes? And remember Otis? Remember we joked about that? He had a lot of aggression at that time. It just, you know, just feels forced. But I like this little change with Otis. Kind of spices things up a little bit. We'll see where it goes from here. Now, it's only one match. Don't be concerned. But keep it in the back of your mind. The beginning of the year, we talked about how we'd like to see Nakamura get some type of a push. He started getting it. Cesaro getting some type of a push. Then we started worrying that maybe this is designed for the Royal Rumble, so multiple people on SmackDown, fans would think, hey, that person may actually have a shot to win the Royal Rumble. When almost everybody on your roster you feel has no shot, you know, becomes, you know, less enjoyable because you pretty much could predict who the finalists will be. So now Royal Rumble is over, Elimination Chamber is over, and now you're questioning, okay, now what happens to Shinsuke? Now what happens to Cesaro? Do they gradually start going back to mid-card like they've been used? Well, again, tonight is only one match. I think this is designed to have the three-way, not the one-on-one. We'll see what happens. But basically, Apollo Crews comes out. He's got the Nigerian colors, and he cuts a promo, and he talks about how his family is of Nigerian descent, that he brings up that he's not from the hood, that, you know, he is from, you know, royalty. And, you know, the storyline basically is that he got uber offended by Big E telling him to go back to catering. And Apollo Crews saying, I didn't go back to catering. I went back to my roots. Now, for people that don't know, Apollo Crews is from Sacramento, California. But his family being in government in Nigeria is true. It's definitely true. It made sense. The only thing that I picked up on, and I don't know if you picked up on it, But why at the very end of Apollo Crews' promo did he start talking like with a little bit of a Nigerian accent? Like it was the reverse Kofi. Remember when Kofi came in, Jamaican me crazy, and he was doing the Jamaican accent, then he started talking normal? Tonight, you had Apollo Crews talking normal in his normal accent, and then in like the last sentence to two sentences, sounded like he suddenly had a Nigerian accent. It almost sounded like he forgot. You know, like that, oh, that's right, I got to be doing like a little bit Nigerian accent. So Nigerian Prince, look, I have no problem with it. Apollo Crews, it's going to be very difficult to have him come across as a heel because of his persona all these years. You know, remember we say he smiles all the time? I mean, just, so it's going to be hard to overcome that. But you know what? I immediately think of Cedric Alexander. I never thought Cedric Alexander would do this so well, being a heel. And Apollo Crews, I like what I saw tonight. Basically, going back to his roots and his family from Nigeria and royalty, yeah, that's good. Let's see where this goes. But Apollo Crews beat Shinsuke pretty handedly. So, again, it's only one match, but, you know, you might want to just pay attention to that because you don't want to see suddenly now Shinsuke, oh, they changed their mind. Oh, let's now push Apollo Crews, and Shinsuke just gradually goes down and down and down. But, yeah, his background is legit. I'm not, that's not a joke. I mean, the only thing about Apollo Crews, and I could be wrong. I mean, I don't study bios that much, but I'm pretty sure that he was born in Sacramento, California. I don't think he was from overseas, but you know what? It doesn't matter. He can be born in California and be very proud of his Nigerian heritage. I was born in Brooklyn, New York. And I'm proud to be an Italian. And, you know, I'm proud to have my culture. You know, I don't feel that my culture is better than anybody else's, but I have no problem where they're going with this with him. So, mystery man, will fans be behind Apollo Creed with this gimmick? We'll see. We'll see. You know, look, he's had so many years, even before WWE, he's had so many years of being so light and his character being so, if you want to use the term, milquetoast, that you're not going to suddenly change it overnight. It's going to be a process. When he put the scarf on and it felt like it was something worth, the Nigerian colors makes it valuable enough. But doing that, it almost feels like that's what they should have done more with Roman Reigns, other than that ceremony that time. You know, if like he should always put something on that's very, very valuable. Sam was born in Canada, and he's happy to be Italian. So cool. In the back, you know, and I just realized that Roman Reigns likes to watch a lot of TV from his couch during SmackDown episodes. Roman Reigns sitting on the love seat once again, Paul Heyman whispering to him that the tag team match at Fastlane, Edge and Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, will be scrapped if Daniel Bryan wins the match tonight against Jey Uso. Okay. Bianca Belair comes out. Adam Pearce, Sonya Deville in the ring. Basically, she now decides who she's facing at Mania. We opened up talking about this. They show a little video montage of Asuka. Little video montage of Sasha Banks. And as I mentioned earlier, Bianca Belair talking about how, you know, everybody's been waiting for a long time for a decision, and she finally knows who she wants to face. Reginald's music hits. He cuts this long promo that, you know, she chooses Sasha. She's going to be disappointed. She's going to be a failure, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, when I said earlier, Sasha coming out, cute, don't ever speak up for me. They let him cut his whole promo before they hit Sasha's music. So Sasha basically, you know, talks about her being the boss. Bianca is the EST. And the match is set. Pointing at the sign. And I will repeat what I've said a few times already. Good for WWE for not overthinking this. They didn't need the tag titles. They didn't need to become champions and then lose the titles and have a falling out. That kind of feels like what they're doing with Asuka and Charlotte. They didn't need that with Sasha and Bianca Belair. The EST versus the boss. You don't get built up this high to have to have complexity. When you get that high, just two of the greatest going against each other is enough. That's one of the perks. Perks! That's one of the perks that you have as a promotion when you have stars that become at the peak of their game. When you have stars at the peak of their game, you don't have to come up with these complex storylines. The best versus the best. Easy, easy. And honestly, I'm with you, Darren. They didn't need that tag title match. And it feels like the only reason why they did that was because the card itself, other than the EC matches, was a little weak. It was a little weak. So, let's put Sasha and Bianca and kind of tease that they could be champions. And people tuned in for that. Sami Zayn approaches King Corbin in the back. They don't like each other. Sami with his film crew. Sami Zayn basically decides that he and Baron Corbin should be a tag team. Together, they could win titles. And even though they don't get along, Sami Zayn thinks it's a good idea for them to team up. And tonight, they're taking on the Street Profits. Baron Corbin getting annoyed at Sami Zayn's videographers, telling them, get out of my way, shut the video, stop recording me, this and that. And that would end up costing them the match tonight. They take on the Street Profits, and then what ends up happening, we have Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode in the back watching the match, and they had the solo cups, which was pretty funny. But basically, Baron Corbin gets distracted by the videographers. He starts yelling at them, and Montez Ford dives over Sami Zayn and onto Baron Corbin outside the ring, and that spot was beautiful. It was just absolutely awesome. And while that's going on, Angelo Dawkins hits the net breaker on Sami Zayn. Montez Ford hits the frog splash, pins Sami Zayn, match over. And after the match is over, Baron Corbin is pissed off at Sami Zayn for these videographers, and we'll see where that goes from here. Kayla Braxton with Daniel Bryan in the back. Daniel Bryan doesn't think that Edge could beat Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. Daniel Bryan thinks he has a better shot. Edge enters the picture. He heard what Daniel Bryan said and basically said that if Daniel Bryan does beat Roman Reigns, that they'll face each other at WrestleMania. All right, if that was fine before, then why would Edge feel so disrespected by Adam Pearce? Not a big deal. Not a big deal. But anyway, now we get Seth Rollins and Cesaro. By the way, I'm loving all the outfits that Seth is wearing because that's triggering all the people that don't like Seth Rollins. I'm a fan of Seth Rollins. Ever since they stopped with that, John, I like Seth Rollins. I have no problem with him. Seth Rollins comes out, kind of recaps from 2 weeks earlier. And last week, for those that don't know, Seth Rollins sent a letter to WWE. It was circulated over social media, basically to further the storyline through social media channels, which is fine. So for a few of you out there that DM'd me earlier and said you wanted to see the letter, there it is. Wasn't signed, but I like how he's got his logo in the back, by the way. But he writes, to WWE management regarding flagrant disrespect and egregious conduct To whom it may concern, I am writing to you to formally express my sincere disappointment and anger in the dishonorable actions of the SmackDown roster locker room and treatment by this company with regards to my greatly anticipated return last Friday, February 12th. At the behest of this very office, desperate for a true leader and star of my magnitude to help lead SmackDown to new heights, I agreed to return from my personal leave and sacrifice precious moments with my loved ones. I spent considerable time and energy planning for this moment that should have been a triumph, an exaltation, exhalation. Why does that not look right? Well, anyway, of a multi-time world champion. Instead, I was met with an embarrassing farce. The disregard and disrespect shown by the SmackDown superstars for shunning my inspiring message must be addressed. While I intend to deal with these patronizing, ungrateful, so-called superstars in my own time, I expect the full force of this office to swiftly and forcefully reprimand those who refuse to embrace my vision. I await your response and best efforts to make amends for this incident. Sincerely, Seth Rollins. Blah, 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 blah. Cesaro comes out. Seth Rollins wants to help Cesaro. Seth Rollins has grabbed the brass ring. He has reached the ceiling. He wants to help Cesaro get to that brass ring. He feels what Cesaro is missing is the killer instinct. Seth Rollins has that killer instinct. He wants to give it to Cesaro. And he said that if Cesaro would have listened to him 2 weeks ago, and if they worked side by side, right now, Cesaro would have won the Elimination Chamber, would have defeated Roman Reigns at the Chamber, and would be Universal Champion right now. So he wants Cesaro to embrace the vision. That is the new phrase that they are going to repeat over and over and over. Embrace the vision. Embrace the vision. If you say it fast enough, it sounds like division. And guess what? Won't be surprised if somebody later on says that actually that play on words actually is intentional. Embrace the vision. But if you say it fast, embrace the vision. See? I like picking up things on that. He tells Cesaro, I don't need your answer tonight. Think it over. Take a week. Think about it. Cesaro drops Seth Rollins to the mat. Seth Rollins with the microphone still in his hand is telling Cesaro, don't do it. Don't do it. Cesaro puts him in a Cesaro swing and swings him about, I don't know, maybe 7-8 times, drops him. And then Cesaro does it again. And I counted it. The second time around, he did the Cesaro swing 14 times to Seth Rollins. And it was funny because Seth tosses the mic while he's spinning. His jacket flies off. And you know we got the feud now of Cesaro versus Seth Rollins. You know those matches are going to be fire. Mystery Man says they're never going to push Cesaro. Look, let's be a little realistic. Roman Reigns is the champion. Probably going to be champion till at least summertime. Cesaro's not going to break that threshold of becoming WWE champion. I still think that they should consider bringing Cesaro down to NXT. There are so many people that Cesaro could tear the roof off as far as buildings. I mean, could just tear the roof off the building. You think about it. And I think Cesaro could do similar to what Finn Balor did. They brought Finn Balor back to NXT. Yes, Finn Balor was a huge NXT star from the get-go. But the thing is that Finn Balor went back there, became champion. You know, yes, the injury screwed things up. I think Cesaro would have so much of a better place in NXT. Definitely. I think NXT should be utilized more for their, not over-the-hill stars, but for their older stars that seem to have plateaued on the main roster. especially the ones that could still kill it in the ring. Bring him to NXT. It's kind of a fresh new start. If he became NXT Heavyweight Champion, I think people would embrace it, love it. And who knows? Maybe that still happens. Yeah, Darren, there's nothing wrong with being a smaller fish in a smaller pond. Roman Reigns right now is the dominant one. You're not going to overtake Roman Reigns. Period. On the Raw side, there is four or five people that Cesaro is not going to overtake either. So for now, Cesaro feuds with Seth Rollins, may get a couple of wins out of it, but you got to look one step ahead. It's not leading to a world title run anytime soon. I personally think you put Cesaro in NXT. Have him have matches with Gargano. Have him have matches with Balor. Matches with Ciampa. You could go down the list. There are a ton of people that Cesaro could tear it up with. I personally think Cesaro in NXT is definitely something that WWE should consider. So Cesaro and Seth Rollins will be feuding a little bit. Then we get the main event. As Cesaro is walking to the back, Daniel Bryan walks to the ring, has a match with Jey Uso, and it ends up a double countout. They're brawling outside the ring, the referee counting 6, 7, 8, and now it seems like Daniel Bryan ain't making it back into the ring. Now remember the stipulation, if Daniel Bryan beat Jey Uso tonight, Daniel Bryan would get a match against Roman Reigns at Fastlane for the title. They did a double count out, so he doesn't get that match. Now, what I didn't like also is after the match is over, Roman Reigns starts beating the shit out of Daniel Bryan, basically repeats the other day. And I'm saying to myself, okay, cue Edge's music. What's going on here? And I just thought it was a very sloppy way to end SmackDown. No Kevin Owens either. Yes, C-Med. You know, I personally think Kevin Owens feuding with Roman Reigns, that should be done. You got to start getting fans to forget about that for the time being. But I thought the very end of SmackDown was a little bit sloppy. So, Benjamin, what are you talking about? How's he going to get the WWE title? Darren, I don't know what you're talking about, Darren. I mean Cesaro going for the NXT championship. I don't know what you... my point is, with Cesaro, which I thought I was very clear, Cesaro is not going to win the WWE championship or the Universal championship anytime soon. Roman Reigns has a stranglehold on that belt. On Raw, there are too many people that are above Cesaro that he's not going to leapfrog over, especially if Brock Lesnar comes back as well. So put Cesaro in NXT, let him go for an NXT title. It should not be looked at as a step down. At the end of the day, they all work for the same company. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, overall, SmackDown, I thought, was a good show. There were a couple of moments that just felt, I don't want to say it's sloppy, yes, but it also felt that, you know, they just winged it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, well, that kind of doesn't matter. Just do it. I hate looking at things, especially like that, and feeling that, you know, they're just going through the motions to get through this SmackDown. They're going through the motions to get through Fastlane, going through the motions because the road to WrestleMania is where it matters, you know? Do I think Cesaro's a victim of the great wrestlers of his era? SoFly asks. No, it's just right now, especially with the pandemic era, you don't have live fans in attendance to have that genuine love like they attach themselves with Daniel Bryan or Kofi Kingston. Because you say the great wrestlers of his era, I just brought up two of them. And they ended up breaking through and no one is going to convince me otherwise. 95% of you out there would have never thought in a million years that Kofi Kingston would ever be WWE heavyweight champion for various reasons. And I think Black is probably on the lowest of the reasons of the list. Just his size and how he's been was used in the past, it just didn't seem like that was a possibility. In the COVID era, when you don't have live fans there, you don't have live fans being able to come up with 5,000 Cesaro section signs. You know what I mean? Like you see one or two, a Thunderdome. It's not the same. So right now, because of the COVID era, because of the momentum of Roman Reigns, Roman Reigns is the head of the WWE table right now. And with the road of WrestleMania, you are not derailing any of that right now. So Cesaro, he's not the victim of great wrestlers in his era. He is just, unfortunately, you know, right place, wrong time. Right place, wrong time. And, you know, it's very rare. I don't think people realize how rare it is to see somebody like Kofi, who wasn't even supposed to be in the chamber originally. It was Mustafa Ali. I mean, it's very rare to see somebody get that opportunity and then get that kind of fan momentum. The yes movement, that's something very, very rare and very, very special. The Cesaro section movement can happen, but it needs to happen with live fans. Social media barking about it is not enough. Having Hall of Fame wrestlers all rooting for Cesaro is not enough. There are too many people that Cesaro would have to leapfrog to get in that position. It's not happening anytime soon. So maybe after this run with Seth Rollins, you know, you'd be surprised. The draft. Draft is not going to be that far off. Who knows? I personally just think have Cesaro show up on NXT. Let him cut a promo about being frustrated on SmackDown, and he showed up on NXT to challenge Finn Balor or somebody else. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think anybody would complain. In fact, I think a majority of people out there would freaking love it. So I think Cesaro would do great in AEW. I mean, Cesaro is one of those guys that, you know, how would he not? You know what I mean? The guy is so freaking talented. How would he not? You know, he's a special player. But unfortunately, there are too many people at this time that are above him. And there's only so far you can get through right now because of the special circumstances. Miz is champ. But understand, Miz is also doing Miz and Mrs. Miz is your big troll heel. Miz has been heavyweight champion already. Miz has been, you know, featured on main events. You know, you can't compare Miz with Cesaro. It's two totally different characters, two totally different styles. Miz is the ultimate troll, the ultimate heel for this era. Not your Roddy Piper heel, not your Ric Flair heel, but for this era, somebody that just gets under your skin, but he doesn't have that go-away heat. People legitimately want to see him get his ass kicked. So, but anyway, with that said, I am going to jet out of here. We are approaching the two-hour mark, and I will be back here in 48 hours. 72 hours, Monday night, 11:05 p.m., so you're welcome to join Mish and I. And like I said, this week I'm going to upload a couple of videos for our great members out there. For my Patreon family, before anybody starts asking questions, I mean, I could probably check it right now. But last night's KNT Chronicles, I have yet to get the audio from Kev Castle, and I just checked my Facebook again, no audio. So I don't know what happened yesterday, but I don't want anybody to think that, you know, I'm slacking off or not posting other people's shows. I haven't been given the file. So once I get the audio, I will put it up for everybody out there. And I thank you for tuning in. As you notice, I got a little cotton mouth tonight. I don't know why. That kind of sucks because it usually means that I'm about to go under the weather, but I feel pretty good. I want to thank everybody again for hanging out last night. Awesome show. If you missed it, especially if you just want to see yours truly doing some indie wrestling stuff, and some of what I posted yesterday was a little bit awful. It was only the second time that I ever made an appearance on camera, and the other one was the first ever time that I ever came out as Tony Cannoli. So those were very early in what I was doing at that time. So we had a good laugh over it. Oh, Devin M says not one dislike. Oh, you're going to jinx it now because you know somebody's going to do it. But I love you guys. Seriously, man, you make this so much fun and so easy. And I love hanging out with everybody. And, you know, I know not everybody can tune in live. I know not everybody can watch the video, especially some of you who work or driving. You're not going to, you know, take your eye off of your job or the road, you know, so I get why not everybody could tune in. But, you know, as long as you get to enjoy the shows at some point during the week, that's what matters. And like I say, as always, before you go, if you enjoyed the show, smash that like button. You know, I even realized tonight we didn't even have to do this. Nobody got triggered tonight. Nobody. It was a good night. I think it was a pretty good week. Oh, Kevon Lewis, happy birthday, my friend. Happy birthday. His birthday is Sunday. So all the best. And once again, much love to everybody out there. Always, you got any feedback, suggestions, comments about the show, agree, disagree with anything I said, speak up. Email, DM, post it in the video comment section. I interact with everybody. It may take a day or two for me to get through everybody, but I always do. And I will be, yeah, like, I don't know if you tuned in yesterday, but I have a ton of license plates that are tributes to movies. And what I started to do is every episode, we put a different plate up. So, like, if anybody remembers, Caddyshack, remember Rodney Dangerfield's license plate? That is his license plate, Cervic. Knight Rider. It's Knight Rider's plate. This is Back to the Future. I have others. They're inside. I got Ghostbusters, some other movies. I'm going to put a different plate up every show from now on. And I guarantee you sometimes some people are going to be like, wait, what plate is that? And you'll look it up. So, yeah. Much love, everybody. Stay safe. You know, keep your head up. I know this COVID thing is taking forever, but I truly believe the worst is over. And we just got to stick this out for a few more months. Believe me, a few more months will be WrestleMania, a little past WrestleMania. Johnson & Johnson's vaccine is about to come out for everybody. And even, like I said, I know there's a lot of you out there that do not want to get the vaccine. Totally respect that. You don't need 100% of the world to be vaccinated to get rid of this virus. So as long as we get enough people vaccinated, then you have people out there who have been struck with COVID that don't even know that they had COVID, that have antibodies in this system, we will eradicate it. We will eradicate it. So, you know, just stay strong, stick it out a little bit more, and before you know it, things will start getting back to normal. It'll take a long time financially to get things back to normal. But you know what? Take it slow and, you know, don't rush it. And little by little, we'll get back. I'm telling you, we'll get back. But all right, everybody, I'm out of here. Take care. Have a great night. And cool. We stood under 2 hours. So my goal is always to be under either 2 hours or 90 minutes. On the very rare occasion, we'll be under an hour, which I don't even remember the last time that's happened. But, you know, little by little, we'll be tightening up the ship a little bit, especially when I start uploading clips so we don't have to have so many discussions during a live episode. That'll help tremendously. But everyone take care, and I'll catch you Monday night, Breakfast Soup Raw. Good night, everybody.